Thank you, Jim. And now we'll go to Sonia, who will give us an introduction to our featured speaker tonight.
Hi, Superholic. Good to see you guys. So tonight we have Elizabeth L. from Visalia. She just celebrated 34 years on the 21st of this month. So congratulations, Elizabeth. We're really happy for you. So I got to speak with her sponsor and also with her this afternoon and kind of get an idea of her experience, strength, and hope. And her sponsor shared with me that Elizabeth is a very spiritual woman and that her journey to sobriety is very reminiscent of, she said, riding a horse, which is a free and God-given thing. So her sobriety is free and God-given, and I guess her favorite animal is a horse, too, and pretty cool. She really wanted me to share that. Her sponsor says that she's been through a lot of hardships in her journey, especially sober, and she's the kind of woman that speaks up and shows up. Elizabeth shared with me her thoughts on alcoholism, and she had said that alcohol expresses feelings, emotions, ideas, and drive. For her, she was always focused on getting the next drink and planning that out. When she had first gotten sober, she was living in Three Rivers, and it was very difficult for her because there were very few women in that area, and she didn't have very much contact with younger people for at least 6 months. So she kind of had that against her. I asked her how she stays sober, and she says one day at a time, and sometimes that's one moment at a time, that's 1 minute at a time. And it took a big desire for her to stop drinking. Her higher power, she says her higher power is Jesus. And for her, that feels like comfort and love. And her advice for the newcomer is to stay close to someone in AA, not getting lonely. She said that's extremely important. You need to reach out and contact someone, have that connection. Get a sponsor as soon as you can. She said that that wasn't quite what she did when she came in, but she would highly recommend that. Get a sponsor immediately and follow through and work those steps right afterwards. Have someone hold you accountable. So that's kind of what I was able to take from her brain tonight, and I'm really excited to introduce our speaker, Elizabeth L. from Visalia, with 34 years.
Here there I we am, go. Talking away. Good evening. This is not our normal way that we usually meet. With the COVID-19 online, technology scares the crap out of me. And so thank you, Bill, for giving me the opportunity to grow and to learn more. And I'm having to do this with my job as well. So it's a good opportunity. I did just celebrate 34 years with COVID in place. Kind of felt sorry for myself. Oh, I can't go to a meeting. I won't get a chip. And, you know, la-di-da-di-da. And I decided it's okay. It's okay. It's not always about me. And I'm sure I'll get a chip when COVID-19 is over and we get to meet together. As an alcoholic, my first reaction is not the same as a normal person. So with that being said, my brother David always says that it's not a problem, it's an opportunity. And I'm taking this opportunity, and I'm thankful for it. I grew up in a highly intelligent family. My brother's really smart. My parents were Mensa. When I went through first grade the second time, I realized I was different. I wasn't the same as my family. And sometimes that was quite a struggle for me. So during the fifth grade sometime, my mom left home. We didn't see her for a few years. And the thing for me to do was I quit school to take care of all my brothers and my dad, fell right into that codependent role and was happy about it. Then my dad decided to move to Norfolk. We lived in Tennessee, and my dad decided to move to Norfolk, Virginia. And, of course, in the South, 55, 60 years ago, women weren't quite as important as they are today. We weren't looked on as being something that was an asset. So me staying home and taking care of my brothers was great. We moved to Norfolk. And after we were there for a few months, my dad left for the weekend, and he didn't come back. And my mother tried to get us, but the family there wouldn't let her have us, so she sent these guys, and she kidnapped us. And we ended up in Washington, D.C. Well, my mother and my father had joined Scientology, kind of like a cult. Not really, but it had some strange ideas. And one of the ideas that they had was you were a spirit and that you were responsible. As soon as you could take care of yourself, you were responsible. You were like an adult. And so when my dad didn't come back, my mom kidnapped us. We ended up in Washington, D.C. in a commune. In the 60s, that was kind of normal. But for me, it was very uncomfortable. One day I was walking around and I decided to go back to my room. Somebody followed me to my room, and I was raped. One of the guys raped me. And during that time, I was trying to talk to my parents about it. They decided I was an adult at 13. It was my fault. They didn't back me up. I no longer felt safe where I was staying. I didn't want to be there anymore. And I told them I was going to leave if they didn't leave, and they said, fine. So I walked out the door. And I sleeping behind a dumpster for a couple of days was much more comfortable than being at the place that I was at. So after 2 or 3 days, I ran across a gal. She was close to my age. She was 14. She was a little bit older than me. And she had a place in an abandoned building in Washington, D.C. in the basement. And there were a little over a dozen of us there at the time. We panhandled. We made things work. And after I was there for a couple of weeks, somebody brought in some beer. And I tasted alcohol for the first time. And I liked it. It gave me something that I didn't have without the alcohol. It gave me courage. It gave me strength. It gave me confidence. The fear went away for a while. And so I always looked forward to it. When they brought alcohol in, I was the first one in line. It didn't happen very often because when you're young and you're panhandling in Washington, D.C., there's not a whole lot of money there. I went home at 15, went to my dad's house. My parents had divorced by then. And I went home pregnant. And I was trying to make up with my father, trying to build a relationship. And at that time, I ended up meeting my first husband, who was 11 years older than me. And he was charming and swept me off my feet. And I was finally going to have everything I needed. I was going to have the love and comfort I needed. There was somebody who cared what I did, where I went, what I was going to do. And so we got married. And I got married a couple of days after my 16th birthday. Had a couple more kids. And by the time I was 19, I had 3 kids. And he left. He decided to go find himself. He turned 30 and freaked out. His life wasn't the way he wanted, so he left. And there I was. No education, no money, 3 kids. And by that time, I was in L.A. We had moved to L.A. And it was a difficult road, but I packed up the kids. I sold everything we had. I moved to Montana, and I learned how to read. And at that time, I was tested. I found out I had a learning disability. And it wasn't that I wasn't intelligent, because I'm probably just as intelligent as my brother, but I had dyslexia. And at that time, they didn't identify it. They didn't know what the problem was. I ended up learning how to read. I got my first job. It's a perfect job. It was in a pool hall, and I served beer and wine. And I could drink as much as I wanted. And I really liked that. And I loved partying. And I had an excuse to be out in the party life and the party scene. And I learned how to drink really well and ended up adding some dry goods to it. But then when I, my husband came back and we moved to Alaska, and we moved on Christmas Day. And it took a few days to get to our little cabin, which was a 27-foot travel trailer with a Wannigan built on the side and the whole thing wrapped in insulation to keep us warm. The little Wannigan had a wood-burning stove and plywood floors, sheetrock walls, and that's the way we lived for the next 4 years. And we lived for the next party. And we toted those kids around. We put them in the truck. We put them to sleep. We went to bonfires. We went to people's houses. There was one bar that was really great. It was called Chilku Charlie's. And we backed that. We had a big panel truck. We backed up that panel truck. And we opened up those doors. This was in the summertime because it was daylight all the time. Opened up those doors. We could watch the kids sleep and sit there and drink. We'd gotten arrested today for doing stuff like that. Finally, the being there and being in Alaska, it kind of got in the way of the drinking, because it was a hard existence if you got drunk and passed out. That would be the end, because it was just too cold. We had some near misses. I would get so drunk, I would take shots and then rush home as fast as I could before I got too drunk. And then there's some places in Alaska, at least at the time, of course this was 34, 35 years, maybe 40 years ago, we would go, and it was way out of the country. I mean, nothing else was around but bar, and it would be packed. And anyway, we thought we were having a great time. And we decided after about 4 years of being in the back country that we wanted something a little bit easier. We tried to decide if we changed locations, if we weren't so isolated, we wouldn't drink so much, we wouldn't use so much, things were going to get better. So we moved to Bremerton, Washington. And we were there for about 3 months, and there was no dry goods. So we ended up switching from beer and wine to vodka. And I could not wait for my husband to get home every single day with that new bottle of vodka, and we'd polish it off every day. And after a couple months, the bottle got bigger, and we still polished it off every single day. So we decided to move again. We decided that wasn't working too well. So we found this place, Mountain Home, Idaho. It's a nice Mormon town. Now, surely that's going to be great. We can work. We can do what we have to do. Went to Mountain Home, Idaho. Guess what? They still sold beer. They still sold alcohol. Quit drinking vodka and went back to beer, 24-pack. Would drink that every single day. Wouldn't start until a certain time, because that was the right thing to do. At that time, I still wasn't starting until 5 o'clock. But sometimes, on occasion, on those party days, I can start at noon. But it was logic didn't seep in. It just didn't seep in. And I knew that what we were doing wasn't working, but I ignored it. The kids were being ignored emotionally. I took care of them physically. They were fed well. They were taken care of. They were always clean. But emotionally, I didn't take care of them. And that was them. So we talk about that today. Anyway, So we went from there. We did another geographic. We moved to Three Rivers. And Three Rivers was out in the woods, out in the country. It was going to be great. For about 5 years, I had a good time in Three Rivers. There was everybody partied. The Indian was our stomping ground. Because we could take the kids there. They could have pizza in the back room and play games. And we could drink and be with our friends. And then I'd usually end up going home first. So I had the kids, take them home. But then after a few years, things were happening. Like some of our friends would been around beach. We lost that friend. We lost another friend in a motorcycle. I started getting angry about the people that we were losing and why were they drinking? And what did I have to talk? I can't tell you how many times, I can't remember how I got home with those children in the car because I was in a blackout. I drank way too much. I had started using dry goods by then, so the combination was really hard. And I knew by 1980, I knew that I had a bad drinking problem. And it wasn't going to go away just by ignoring it and just by drinking. So it was very different thinking. I was a Cub Scout leader. I was a Sunday school teacher. And I remember this one time, stopping at the Indian, having a few drinks, getting ready to go pick up the Cub Scouts from school and take them home. And their parents were the same way, so what did it matter? All the good I did didn't do good because I was a poor example because I was drinking too much alcohol. And It was really hard. Then I got pregnant again with my fourth child. And that trying to stop drinking, trying not to drink, or drinking very little, trying to control it, I did all the stuff that's in the big book. Take a drink, not take a drink, control it, drink like a lady. And the list just goes on and on. I did everything I could. I managed to make it through that pregnancy. I had a home birth. She did pretty good. Even I smoked cigarettes, and they couldn't even find signs of the cigarettes on her. And that was a God thing. It was really a God thing because she should have had some kind of side effects. Which she didn't. She was a very charming and intelligent lady at this today. But a couple of weeks after she was born, man, I couldn't wait. I had a margarita, and it tasted so good. And that poor child, I was nursing, and she got sick, sicker than a dog. So then by that time, the wheels are spinning in my brain. I know this isn't the right thing to do, but it's the only thing I thought in my life that I really liked, that I really enjoy. And then I started noticing the drugs were disappearing, the alcohol was disappearing, our kids were enjoying it as well. And I tried that last year. I tried to quit. I quit for 6 weeks. Oh, I've got this handled. I can just have a drink. I can just have a couple of drinks, and it will all be good. Just have a few beers. So I started drinking again, and I quit again. And there was a party, had to go to the party. And that game that I was playing with myself was crazy. I finally, after doing that for a year, I gave in. I said, this is it. I need to do something about this. And I decided it was my husband. It was all his fault. He was the reason why I was drinking. So I left. I packed up the kids and I left. I knew that everything was going to be fine. And when I was gone, I still kept drinking. And I knew I had to do something. So my husband and I started talking, and we decided that it was time to go to AA. And he knew that he needed to go, but he didn't want to go alone. I'll go with you. Because I'm still sneaky and conniving. And I didn't want to tell him that I knew that I had a problem or I knew that I had alcohol. And I could get away with it because I always drank less than him. I made sure I drank less than him and everybody else around me so nobody would know. I'm hanging out with alcoholics. So everybody's, oh, she's nice. She doesn't drink that much. She doesn't do that. And I was. And I just, it was a difficult time. But then I finally walked in those doors. He and I walked in at the same time. We got sober at the same time. We walked into the church up in Three Rivers, and I had all these excuses. And then I back up just a little bit. I was waitressing, and my coworker, she was the head waitress, so she was actually my boss. We worked at Norm's. And then we worked at the River Wharf together. We worked at Corky's on the River. And all the time, I'm picking her brain, because I knew she had something I wanted. And she was in AA. She ended up being my first sponsor. So we continued to work together for that first year. And that I hadn't asked her to be my sponsor yet. It wasn't until later... I was almost a year sober, and I wanted that sobriety so much, but I was still cocktailing. And some of the people that I was cocktailing, they kept spiking my drink, switching drinks. I remember this one time, I've said this to a few of you, that I had a mouthful of gin and tonic, And I'm sitting there, and I can taste it. And my brain is saying, swallow it, spit it out, swallow it, spit it out. And it was the longest 30 seconds, 45 seconds. And the fact that I didn't just spit it out just kind of solidifies the fact that, yes, I am truly an alcoholic. I finally did spit it out. I talked myself into it, and I said, this is crazy. I went home. I told my husband. He said, well, you still got to work and do this. I was waitressing. At that time, I was working 4 small part-time jobs. And then a few weeks after that happened, my brother committed suicide, one of my brothers. And that was really hard on me because he was living with me. I was trying to take care of him. I was trying to help him out. And it was devastating. It took me weeks to get over it. But because of this program, and because I wanted my first birthday so badly, and because of this program and the people that I had met in this program and all the old farts that I thought were just old and there, and now I'm one of them because I'm about the age that they were, and they stuck by me. They were there for me. They were there with me, talking with me. And it got me through that rough period. And I got to celebrate my first birthday in Three Rivers. And I was very excited about that. My husband and I stayed married for another year or so. And then because of personal reasons and because of things that we just couldn't, I couldn't deal with. He was hitting the kids and he was angry. And I couldn't let that. He could do whatever he wanted to me, but he couldn't hurt my children. So I took the kids, and he left the home. And then later on, I took them. We moved to Visalia. And while I was in Visalia, I met a wonderful man while I was waitressing at Merle's. By this time, I had started school. I wanted an education. I was addicted to learning. I wanted to know what other people knew, because I still had a fifth grade education, but by this time I could read. So that's how I got my jobs. I was working and stuff. And I started COS, and I started with art, and I started taking a couple of art classes. And I realized that I could do this. So I thought, well, I'll take it. I took the test, the academic test. I had to start at the bottom of every class, but I got through it, and it took me 6 years. So I finally graduated from COS. Worked full time, raised my 4 children, went to COS, and sometime during that time, right after I finished my AA degree, before I walked the line, I married my, my husband, my second husband, when I first met him, he scared the crap out of me because he was so kind and so caring and so present that I didn't think it was real. Nobody's like that. People just aren't that way. And he scared me, and I didn't want to continue the relationship, and I tried to sabotage it before it ever got started. I went through, and he was just patient and kind. And so we ended up getting married. I graduated, and then he encouraged me to continue my education. So I started Fresno State. While we were married, he helped. He helped with the kids. I wasn't used to that. My first husband didn't change diapers or help with the kids or feed the kids or even babysit the kids. Now I don't call it babysitting because you can't babysit your own kids. But he just said he wasn't going to babysit. So that was fine. And here's my second husband. These aren't even his kids. He takes care of the kids. He took care of us. He mowed the lawn. He did all the stuff that normal people do, you know. And it just, it was awesome. It was wonderful. And life was really good. And I was so excited. And about 10 years on our 10th anniversary, I found out that my mom had stage 4 cancer. And so he helped me through that. When she died, a week later, I found out my dad had stage 4 cancer. He passed away Christmas Eve that year. I had just lost a granddaughter from heart disease. And so then I lost my father. And on Easter break, because I was a teacher by then, I went back to Virginia to bury my father. And we had him cremated, and I took him back. And on the way home, found out a grandson had passed away of heart disease. And so I was just, my husband loved me through that. But then after that, I decided it was church and it was him. And so I went and started going to less and less AA meetings. I started going more to Celebrating Recovery, and went to Celebrating Recovery for about 10 years. And it's hurts, habits, and hang-ups. It's not alcoholics, and I wasn't in groups with other alcoholics, and they didn't share that same thing with me. But I was so bonded to my husband, it was okay. I had an outlet, some place to talk. And then, like I said, I finished my education at Fresno State. When I was at Fresno State, I ended up magna cum laude, and I ended up with a Dean's Medallion and valedictorian, and I was very proud of that. So it wasn't that I was stupid. It was that I had a learning disability. Once I learned to deal with that learning disability, I was able to complete my education, which is something I would have never done if I hadn't been sober. I didn't even think about doing anything like that until I got sober. That's one of the gifts of sobriety, is getting that drive back to fulfill the dreams that you had when you were a little kid. And that's what I was doing. But I went to less and less AA meetings, started going to more and more Celebrating Recovery meetings, and I thought everything was great, right? Wrong. I was wrong. And by the grace of God, I made it through, and I made it back to AA. Things started happening in my life that were not good. This love of my life, he had cancer, he beat it, he got heart disease, he had open heart surgery, he had a quadruple bypass, then he went to, but it was just one thing after another. And then after 6 years, I started having these headaches, and we took him to the doctor, and they said he had brain cancer. It was glioblastoma, and it wasn't a matter of if he was going to survive. It was a matter of how long he was going to survive. So for 11 months, 22 days, I was blessed to be able to take care of this man who had taken care of me so well. I'm sorry. I still get emotional this part. So, but I still hadn't found my way back. And after all that time, you know, time went by, and it was about 6 weeks, 2 months after he died, that was cleaning everything out, and I went in his medicine cabinet. There's your methadone, your morphine, your tranquilizers, all that stuff. And I'm looking, I wonder what that feels like. I wonder what that feels like. I wonder what that, and I knew right then I was in trouble. So I called his nurse, the nurse that he had.
Sorry?
The nurse that he had told him that they had to come and get the drugs. He says, well, this is how you dispose of them. I said, no, you need to come and get the drugs. You don't understand, I'm an alcoholic. And if you don't come to get these drugs, I may be on these drugs before this night is over. So he thought it was, he laughed and he said, okay, I'll be right over. And he came and he picked him up. And that Tuesday, I walked into Christ Lutheran and I was home. I was home. I was hearing things that I needed to hear. I was with the right people. I was celebrating recovery works for someone else. That's awesome. However you can get sober, that's awesome. But it wasn't for me. I'm a Christian. I'm a churchgoer. That's a whole different part of my life. I needed AA, and I needed the real thing. Because by this time, my life, again, had become unmanageable. I had become unmanageable. And so anyway, I started going back to AA, and for the first year, I just sat down and shut up, just like I was a newcomer. At that time, I had 31 years. And I just needed to get my belly full of AA again, because at that point I was in crisis. It taught me a big lesson. I don't care if I have 60 years of sobriety, I am not leaving this program again. So within that first year, I heard a lot of stuff I needed to hear. I heard a lot of validation of things that I was doing, and I heard a lot of things that I needed to be doing. So I continued to started working a program again, started working the AA program. I got a sponsor, and she's out there. Hi. Anyway, so I got a sponsor, and I completely changed my life. I got new friends, a lot of my married friends, that was part of the problem, left because I no longer had a husband. It's strange how people are. So it's just, my whole life changed. I met a whole new group of people, and that's what Mandy was talking about my horses. I love horses, and I've always loved horses, but I didn't know how much I loved horses until I met this group of people that started teaching me how to ride and how to actually do what I need to. It took me to the backcountry. Some of the most exciting experiences that I've ever had. And I have to back up just a little bit. My doctor at the time hired me to do a wedding, to photograph a wedding. I do that part time. And when I was photographing the wedding, it was a cowboy wedding, and I'm thinking, oh, there's going to be beer and partying and playing. And I was like, okay, can I handle this? Can I really do it? I had just found my way back to AA, and I wasn't sure how strong I was, but I decided I really want this couple that were getting married that was just really awesome. Hi, guys. And they were really awesome, and there was no alcohol. I didn't get it. I didn't understand. It just didn't seem like what my expectation, what was in my brain, that didn't seem like the right thing. Then I find out that one of the people, one of the wedding party, was also in the program. And, man, that was nice. It was nice. And I started hanging out with these guys, and they're my dearest friends today. They're just really awesome people. But so they taught me how to ride horses and how to do things. Backing up again, the courage part was I had to actually admit that I didn't know how to ride. I rode I had gone on pack trips, and I had ridden a little bit here, a little bit there, and you ride when you're a kid, and every opportunity I got, but I didn't really know how. And my friend Mike taught me how to ride. He and his wife had me over. They taught me how to ride, and boy, I get on a horse, and I am right with the world. So that was one thing that I've learned to do in my new sobriety and the new side of life since my husband has been gone. It was such a turning point. I had to learn to live life all over again. I had to learn a different way of life. I had to learn how to like myself in my own skin without somebody sitting there telling me I was okay. I had to know that I was okay. When I first came back to this program, I really didn't think that I was so full of grief and so full of pain that I didn't want other people to know about it. I figured surely if I sat there and told you what was going on with me, I couldn't stop crying, that you would leave. And I was wrong. I am important. The things that I'm going through is important. It's just as important as you are. We're all important, and we're in this thing together. Dealing with life on life's terms is all-inclusive. It is dealing with every aspect of your life and learning how to live, and learning how to live with our feelings, learning how to live with our mistakes, learning how to live with our grief, learning how to live with our joy, and learning how to live with our experiences, our strengths. And sometimes life doesn't give us what we think it should. Sometimes life takes a turn, but it's still living life on life's terms. And we just have to deal with it. But through this program, I can find peace within myself now, peace within my heart. And a little over 3 years ago, I came home, and I came home to you, and I came home to AA. And this program again saved my life. I can be on a dry drunk and not be drinking, and which is, I brought that up because that's where I was at. Until I started working this, I don't care if you've got 40 years, are immune to a relapse. And I do this when I'm in crisis. I do it one day at a time, 5 minutes at a time. So I learned to stay sober and happy at the same time. And I could have happiness in my heart and still cry, because I know who I am and where I'm going and what I'm doing. And I'm doing this sober, and I'm doing it without drugs and without alcohol. And for that, I'm proud of, you know. And learning to live life alone without a partner has been soul-searching. And being in COVID-19, you're alone, is really different. But I'm growing, and like my brother says, it is not a problem, it's an opportunity. It's an opportunity to grow, it's an opportunity to discover more about myself. And with that, expectations is most of our problems, or is my problem. I'm just talking about me, my problems, what I expect. I have to keep my expectations under control. So in the big book, my philosophy, the very first thing I memorized when I came into AA on page 420, when I first came in 34 years ago, it wasn't page 420. They've had a few additions since then. But it is, I must keep my magic magnifying mind on my acceptance and off my expectations, for my serenity is directly proportional to my level of acceptance. So I just have to accept life on life's terms. And that doesn't mean that I stay in a bad situation. It simply means that learning and growing every day to me. Grow a little bit more, grow a little bit more, learn how to deal with these problems, and learn how to deal with them in sobriety. because even going through all that, as long as I stayed sober, that day was a much better day than if I drank. And so just one day at a time, you just put all those days together, and then pretty soon there you are. The trouble with having 34 years, that means I'm 34 years older. That means I'm getting old, but that's okay. I'd rather do it sober than drunk any day. So with that, I will turn it back over to Sonia.